Hey everyone, welcome to Spoiler Peace Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Dave Riedel. My pronouns are he, him. I'm a movie type person and I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Evan Crean. My pronouns are he, him. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living.
And my name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network, and I, too, am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
Yes, you are.
Indubitably.
Indubitably. So we got a show, as we always do each week. But before we get into the show, which we got four movies to talk about tonight. It's been a long time since we did four movies, but one of them we're going to do short. But anyway, before we get into that, over on our Patreon, we are talking about the 1976 sci-fi cult classic Logan's Run. I don't know, every time I'm about to get into, just like, I hear the word classic even though the word cult is in front of it, and it just makes me laugh. So anyway, we talk about Logan's Run because we all like 70s sci-fi and we thought, let's do Logan's Run. So we did it and we talked about it and it's quite lively, and it's over on the Patreon. And if you are a $5 patron or above, you have access to it and I think more than 300 bonus episodes at this point. I don't really know how many there are. There's a shitload. So
over 200 at least.
Yeah. More than 200.
Oh God. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
So, if you want to, you know, take us up on that, if you want to give us money each week, each month, you'll have access to a whole smorgasbord of stuff.
We often talk about movies that aren't new releases. So if you want to hear us talk about classic movies, the Patreon's the place to do it. We often just, like, you know, throw a dart at a board and then hit a movie we were interested in talking about. And
for sure.
We also have polls that people can vote on as well.
That's true. That's all true. See, this is why I should never host the show, because I just forget everything I'm supposed to say. But but that being said, this is something I remember. The four movies on our docket tonight are Thor, Love and Thunder, On the Third Day, which is not the other title of Thor, Love and Thunder. It's On the Third Day is a different movie. Then The Summoned, and then The Princess. So those are the movies. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do Thor, Love and Thunder first because I'm the only one who saw it. And I got to say, you know, if you're into the Marvel, if you're into the MCU, sure. And if you're lukewarm on it, I mean, I kind of feel like I've read a little bit about how people are describing this movie as sort of like a kid's movie, which kind of makes sense. And some of them are saying it derisively and some are not. And my problem with it is that it's all over the place. Like, I feel like for the first third or so, the humor is just like so forced in a way that Thor Ragnarok didn't feel forced. Like, for some, like Thor Ragnarok was kind of a miracle how that all worked out the way it did.
It's so good.
Whereas this one, it feels like they're like, how can we repeat that? Let's throw a bunch of jokes at the wall and see if they stick. And only like 5% of them stick, at least in the first third. And it's good to see Valkyrie, who doesn't have as big a role as she should, but she does still have she's got a decent supporting performance, but it's really Thor and Jane Foster's story. But the way they kind of pay lip service to cancer is sort of weird. And the way they put a bunch of children in danger is sort of weird and icky. And I mean, the movie opens up with the death of a child. So, my favorite thing. that's irony, listeners. And so, and Christian Bale is like, you know, this is what happens when you cast Christian Bale. He's really good, I think, as the villain in this, but he is in a different movie. You know, he is in I'm going to kill everyone because I'm evil movie. And Chris Hemsworth and Natalie Portman and Tessa Thompson are like, we're in a comedy, you know? So, so tonally it's just like all over the place. And here's the other thing I wanted to say is some of the special effects are great and some of them are terrible. Like Star Trek, the original series, bad, you know?
Whoa. Yeah. You see the zipper on the suit?
Kind of. It's like there are a few scenes, especially in the beginning, where it's so clearly sets that are not very well lit. And then some of the special effects, the graphics, in the earlier scenes. It's like they I have read, and I don't know whether this is true because I don't think I've read it anywhere reputable, but these movies are so special effects heavy that they have to farm out the special effects to different special effects companies, and some of them are better than others, you know? And if that's true, I would believe that, because I have a hard time believing that the people who did the special effects at the end are the same people who did the special effects in the beginning, which is at best, let's call it wobbly. So,
anything as bad as when Thor lost his eye and you could still see his eye under the eye patch?
I don't remember. I don't even remember if he has an eye patch in this one.
No, I don't think he does.
It was nice to see Natalie Portman playing comedy, because I didn't really know she could do that. She's fine.
Oh, I love her.
It's, I'm excited. You know, it's okay. It's, yeah, no, it was nice to see her, and it's nice to see her storyline be not shitty like it is in the other two Thor movies she's in.
Oh, it so, really is. It's so bad in the other two.
Yeah. She's got a lot more to do in this. And this movie's at its best when it's sort of like when the comedy is flowing a little bit better, more easily between Jane and Thor. And when it's forced, it's forced. And when it's not, it's not. It's just a really mixed bag. I'm not disappointed that I saw it, but at the same time, it's like I could have spent 2 hours differently. So that's how I feel about Thor: Love and Thunder. I did like seeing Russell Crowe show up as Zeus. That was fun, but it's all played for laughs too. Russell Crowe surprisingly comedically adept in this picture anyway. So
I'm not surprised. He's funny. Mm-hmm. I think he's funny,
is, but
so,
I mean,
yeah.
this is like a straight up comedic role. It's not like his. Oh. It's not like when he's heavy, but also comedic, like in The Nice Guys. You know.
Yeah.
This is a role played for laughs, and he's game and he pulls it off. But at the same time, it's kind of like this is what you're using Russell Crowe for. So anyway, so that's Thor. I've talked enough about Thor. Let's move on. That's out in theaters now. You had a question, Megan?
No, I was just gonna say I'm still excited to see it.
Yeah,
your review is lukewarm.
if you're, I mean, it's not bad. It's not like a waste of your time. It's just like, sorry. Anyway.
I'm here to see Jane Foster be Thor. That's what I'm. Yes. And a jacked Natalie Portman. I'm here for that. And I like
her arms are enormous. So
I'm so here for that. Love it, love it. That's my only reason for showing up.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on, we're going to talk about On the Third Day, which is an Argentinian horror movie. And let me get up ye old IMDb summary. On the third day, Cecilia and her son Martin have a car accident. On the third day after the crash, she wanders by herself on a lonely route, and there is no clue of her son. No clue of her son?
This is a very badly written summary.
Yes, it is. She can't remember what happened during this time, and she's desperately looking for a son. On her quest, she finds coincidences with her case and other police files. She's not looking at police files. What is this?
Nope.
What is this?
Nope.
Which seem to be acts of a brutal hunting. Okay. The circle goes round, and Cecile will end up facing a religious man who is the responsible of this slaughter. For her, he is a lunatic. For him, Cecilia is the enemy. I mean, I guess that's... it's actually not inaccurate once you get past, you know.
It's very disjointed, much like this movie.
Yeah, this movie is, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. This movie's bad, but.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But
it's so bad.
It's bad in a way that is, this movie's almost inept. But the thing about it that is really, really strange is it seems to think that it is the first movie of a franchise. Now, I don't know why you would...
I didn't get that from this movie.
Well, did you sit through the closing credits?
Not really.
Either
of you?
No. I'd
had
enough
by that
point. I sat through most of them. Not all of them.
At the end of the closing credits, Martin opens his eyes. You know,
oh, I knew that was going to happen. Yeah.
Oh, sure. I mean... mm-hmm. But this is one of the things that's just so terrible about this movie. It's like, so Cecilia is, there's a vampire. Cecilia and her husband are in, or ex-husband are in a custody battle. And her ex-husband seems like a real asshole. And
abusive. Piece of shit.
Yeah. And she decides she's going to take Martine and flee to somewhere. And while she's doing this, they get into a car accident with, I guess he's a priest or he's some fucking guy. He's Catholic.
Vampire
and
hunter.
He's a vampire hunter, and there's a vampire like in the flatbed of his truck that escapes, because of course it does. And then it, you know, Cecilia wakes up 3 days later after this crash and she can't remember anything, and she's in the hospital and the doctor's a nice guy and he's like, the police are coming. And then the police come and they're stupid. And
and she kills a woman. She smothers a woman while she's hiding.
Yeah. Smothers a woman while she's hiding. And then she, you know, basically everybody she comes into contact with ends up dead. And it turns out she's been bitten by this vampire and she doesn't know it. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, like, I don't understand the whole amnesia thing. It's like Martine has disappeared because the vampire, you find out later, dragged him off. And then the vampire turns Cecilia into a vampire. And then she chomps on her kid's neck, which I was like, I knew that was coming, but I was just so, this is just, this movie's just, I mean, it's not tasteless, but it's really distasteful and it's unpleasant. And there's no fun in it. The only thing that's mildly interesting is I feel like the woman who plays Cecilia has some good looks when she, it's like she's in on the gag and the other characters aren't. Like, she's like, either she's remembered for a split second that she's a vampire or she's winking at the audience. I'm not sure exactly how to describe it because she's got that smirk that she pulls a couple of times.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like the weird stylization with the, you know, Cecilia goes to a hypnotist that the doctor takes her to try to figure out, because these 3 days are like missing in her memory. And I kind of feel like, it just like, what's the purpose of all this? You know, if she, like if you had this story laid out linearly, like you wouldn't need to tell this story. You know, because you would just know what happened. So it's like, it's kind of like, if you've got to time jump a movie and you think about it and you put the time jumps together in the correct order and then everything sort of doesn't hold together, it's like, well, what are we doing this for? You know, because it doesn't look particularly good.
No.
It has a couple of moments that I think actually look good, but they're few and far between.
Yeah, well, you know what I think looks good is when the priest, who's also a psycho, I might add, when he pours the lime and the sulfuric acid over the other woman who was in the car accident that the vampire had chomped, and like her body kind of starts decomposing, and then he has a dream. I don't know why he has this dream. I don't know why this dream is in the movie, because it has no significance to anything.
Right. It was confusing.
Yeah, where he has this dream where she comes up and like she's all decomposing and stuff, and it's practical and it looks good. But there's a lot of stuff in this that's not practical. And then the vampire just kind of looks like a joke. It's like supposed to look like, I think the vampire is supposed to look like Max Schreck from Nosferatu, but it really just looks like, you know, somebody who took Tom Savini's class and, you know, got a D. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think this looks good at all. I think you guys are being very generous.
Yeah. Oh, and we should mention that this is, you know, movie, because it's from Argentina, I'm assuming is originally in Spanish, but I wouldn't know that because the version I got, and I'm assuming you two got, was dubbed in really bad English.
Yeah.
The most horrific dubbing.
Yeah,
it's, yeah. I don't mean the translation is bad. I mean that like the acting is bad. You know, whoever the voice actors are the C team. You know,
Well, it's bad on multiple levels. Like, first of all, why dub this movie? It doesn't make any sense, because like having to dub this movie changes the performances of the voices so much. They feel like they're constantly rushing to deliver their lines to match the editing of the movie. And so like all the line deliveries sound extremely rushed. They also don't match up with the lips, which is whatever, but it's distracting. It's like noticeable how much it's not matching up. And then like the performances of the people are so utterly uneven. Like some people in the middle decide to start doing an accent for their characters, even though they didn't start with an accent. Sometimes the kid has like one of those like kid, he talks like a little kid sometimes. Sometimes he doesn't. It's just, it's, they can't even agree on how to pronounce the kid's name. Sometimes yes. they call him Martin. Sometimes they call him Martine. It, make up your mind. Yes. This should be like a very easy thing for the characters and the, whoever is doing this dubbing to lock down.
Yeah.
This movie is the perfect reason, perfect encapsulation of why I despise dubbing. Like, and there are yeah. plenty of fine dubs, but this right here, just you just nailed everything, Evan, that I despise about dubbing, which is why I never watch a movie dubbed. But yeah, it's terrible. I think yeah. it's awful.
So I yeah. feel like it would almost go up a full letter grade for me if I watched it in its intended language. Like,
yeah,
I still, would agree with that.
It still, I think, would be a bad movie, but I feel like it would be a significantly better.
I agree.
A lot more enjoyable.
Yeah, I just like I just found this whole thing so deeply unpleasant and predictable. That's the thing yeah. I think was so disappointing. If it hadn't been, like, I could have gotten over, like, you, we just talked about it on Logan's Run over on the Patreon. Please join. about, like, how I feel about children in danger for no good reason in a movie. And this movie is kind of hinges on that. And so that's deeply unpleasant because it's cheap. You know, you could have, like, Martine could have been, you know, 17. It doesn't have to be 7. There's no reason that this child is a child other than to, you know, I don't, it's
shock value.
Shock value. But the thing that's kind of strange about this is the writer and director, the director Daniel De La Vega, who I think wrote the novel that this is based on. I mean, I'm not sure. I can't remember. Mm. I looked it up and I've already forgotten. Tells you how much I care about it. But it seems like, you know, you have to love your characters in a movie as a writer/director if you're going to spend 6 months, you know, writing it and another 3 months shooting it, another 3 months editing it, or however long the whole process takes. Mm-hmm. But the whole idea that Cecilia is sort of the hero in this movie and that the vampire is sort of the hero in this movie is just kind of icky in a way that I can't put my finger on, you know? It's just really mm-hmm. unpleasant.
Well, yeah.
And this That's is coming from somebody... Only, oh. I was going to say, this is coming from somebody who really likes Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, where Dracula is the hero.
Because it's a great movie, as well, ridiculous yeah. and over the top as it is. I actually, that's like the only thing I like about this movie. The only thing is that Cecilia the vampire yeah. is the hero of this. I think that's it has been done before in other horror films, but not many of them. And so I think it's... Because it hasn't been done quite often, it's unique enough and that's interesting enough. But yeah, I don't find this an interesting story. I think the acting's bad. I think the effects are bad. Dubbing, as we've said, is horrendous. I found this extremely tedious and convoluted. And it's a pretty straightforward story, like you said. Yeah. So there's no yeah. reason for it to be convoluted.
Right.
So yeah, also the one thing I could not get over, and I don't know why this is such a sticking point for me, probably because I did not enjoy this film. I couldn't get past the doctor saying to the hypnotherapist, take her out. She's freaking out. She can't handle it. And he's like, no, it's fine. We have to do it. And I'm like, this is the most unethical hypnotherapy session I've ever seen. It was really bothersome and it bothered me.
See, I don't know enough about hypnotherapy to know what's ethical and what isn't, but I do know it was a bad scene.
Yeah. But when that's what I'm fixating on, rather than like, you know, ooh, what's going to happen next? Or, ooh, what's going on with the characters? Like, yeah, it's not great.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Evan, where do you come down?
Oh, I couldn't stand this movie. I mean, everything you both have said is right on the money. Like, for me, it really starts with the dubbing on so many levels. It's just such a bad choice.
Yeah,
and it makes
really
this movie so much worse. But Megan, the word convoluted, I cannot think of a better word to describe the plot of this movie. It's as disjointed, as convoluted as that freaking IMDb summary that Dave was reading earlier. Oh. It makes about as much sense for most of the movie. And it weirdly is also, to what you both said, predictable at the same time. You
yeah.
know that it is a vampire movie, but... It drops.
What gave it away? Like, the coffin and the flatbed?
Yeah. I mean. Well, it doesn't confirm that it's a vampire movie until until most of the movie is done. It doesn't actually show you the vampire. And it's just, why? Why wait so long? This doesn't have to be Dusk Till Dawn. I don't need to wait an hour into an hour and a half movie to see the vampires. Like,
yeah. But at least once the vampires arrive and From Dusk Till Dawn, they never leave. It's right. just like, right. oh, now you got your vampire movie, motherfucker.
Yeah.
No. And it's some good killing.
Yeah. Oh, boy, is it good killing. But this was so frustrating and tedious, and I was just not a fan.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm right there with you. Well, does anyone have any closing thoughts on the third day? On the third day?
God, no. This like a movie.
No. Okay. All right. Well, then let's move on to The Summoned, or as I like to call it, Get Out, except with souls being sold to the devil instead of, black brains implanted in white bodies. Or I can't remember exactly how that went.
That's it. But, or yeah, white brains and black bodies, but yes.
Yes, but I could not, and I don't know if this is...
I had that too, that it's Get Out.
Well, I don't know if it's because of like, I don't know how the screenplay is written, because obviously I didn't read it. So I don't know if the character is written as a person of color or if they just cast, you know, a black actor or whatever, but I could not get rid of those vibes, especially when the plot thread came. And I'll get to the IMDb summary in a minute, but I got to get this off my chest or I'll forget. You know, when it turns out the girlfriend is in on it the whole time too. You know, and that's when I was just like, what the fuck? So, The Summoned. Two high profile couples, it's one and a half high profile couples, but that's okay, are forced to examine the cost of success when they're invited to an exclusive self-help retreat where their ancestors sold their souls generations prior. That's clunky. Yeah.
It is very clunky. And it's a weird thing to spoiler in the... It
really
yeah,
is.
Yeah, considering you don't find that out until like... The movie's almost over.
Right. The last act. That the last act reveal is that they're like, you know, ancestors were all involved. Like, why spoil that up front? I think that was a good idea that they had. I mean, they totally fumble the execution of it, but
they sure
I think it's
did.
A great, I think oh it's boy, a great yeah. idea.
Yeah. Yeah. This movie is, I mean, problematic's not the right word because it's not, you know, like, it's not like a... bad culturally.
Oh yeah, like, problematic just, in that way.
Right. But it's just it's like it's clumsy. It's really strange how, you know, you'll kind of focus on these character moments with these characters and then they have to jam in plot into like a really short amount of time and then they'll go back to like weird character moments. And then the main character, whose name I can't remember what his name is.
Elijah.
Elijah, right. J. Quentin Johnson is the actor. His character's name is Elijah. Now, I don't know if I missed this, but what I extrapolated from the reason that he's having all of these like visions, he keeps having these dreams in which he has visions of him burying his girlfriend, of him doing all kinds of fucked up shit. I don't know. And like, why is he having these dreams? Because he's so connected to that ancestor who tricked the devil, which is why he's here in the first place. Or like, why is he having those dreams? Like, why would that happen to him? You know, does it, am I wrong? Did they explain that? Or is it just like, he's just having these dreams? You know,
I don't know. There is a psychological element to this movie that I don't think is very well explained. But Megan, you let me know if you disagree with that.
Oh, I don't know if I disagree. I just... And I might be reading too much into the film. I don't think it does really explain it, but because his name is Elijah, and I was like, that's a biblical name. And we're talking about making deals with the devil. I was like, oh, we're going that route. We're having lots of biblical allusions. And Elijah was a prophet. So I'm like, oh, is he seeing potential futures because he's a prophet? Like, I don't know, but it was, so I don't know. In conclusion, but that's the vibe I was getting, whether it was intentional or not.
Yeah. And it's also the character motivations are so muddled. It's like,
oh yeah.
You know, the girlfriend. So apparently what has happened is the ancestors of these people, I think their parent in the girlfriend's case, Lynn, in her case, it's her grandmother, right? Who sold.
Yes.
Future generation souls. Didn't sell her soul. Sold future generation souls to Satan, which is just, can you do that? I've never heard of that before.
She sold her soul and the deal was that it passes to the next of kin. So like whenever that person dies or doesn't fulfill the deal, which is like yearly, they're summoned to sacrifice a soul. If they miss the deal, then they die and then it goes to the next person in line in their family.
Yeah, yeah. But if like, does who's the next person in line in Lynn's family? Does she mention having any siblings or having any kids? I don't think so.
No,
so, like,
I don't think so. I think it starts and ends with her. I don't know what happened to her mom in this equation, but she's right. the person that's holding up the end of the deal now.
And they're all worried about going to hell. And it's kind of like, I feel like you didn't sign. I don't know how contracts work with Satan, but contracts, like you're in this day and age, your grandmother can't sign you, your future self over to, you know, Goldman Sachs. So like, I don't like, how does this all work? Does, you know, what is Satan LLC? How is that different from, you know, anything else?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Megan.
No, I was just going to say, I couldn't, again, because I was thinking about Get Out, all I kept thinking of is, oh, this is how slavery worked.
Yeah.
If you had kids, your kids were going to be enslaved too. So,
and if that's the allegory, then it's kind of, not done very well. Also, when you consider that Lynn, Elijah's girlfriend, is actually, I don't think the screenplay is sharp enough to spell it out. And maybe it's not supposed to, maybe I'm a dummy, but she does seem genuinely conflicted about having brought Elijah here to sacrifice him, because she brought somebody else 9 years earlier who she let go because she felt so guilty about it. But he's still stuck there, and like the guy who runs the camp like made him stay and bury the bodies of the people. That doesn't make any sense either.
Right.
It's like they let him go. And so it's like it's half magic. Like, how does this fucking work?
Right.
This is ridiculous.
Well, yeah. And then there's that whole thing. It's kind of like Evil Dead style where he's like caught in a loop. Like when he runs down the stairs and then he's like back up on the upstairs, or when he drives the car out of the driveway and then ends up back in the driveway. Like, I don't understand how that aspect works, or the stuff of the elevator. I don't understand how those supernatural elements factor into a movie that's otherwise pretty grounded, I would say, in terms of lore and what's going on.
Except for the devil, people coming back from the dead, like generational debts. Yeah, but no, it is. Yeah, they never explain it. And again, I mean, it doesn't have to explain, but it also doesn't make sense. Yeah, it's funny you say Evil Dead. I was thinking In the Mouth of Madness, but yeah, I'm like,
yes,
ooh,
that
made me want to watch In the Mouth of Madness.
In the Mouth of Madness, 2/3 of a great movie. Oh, man.
Oh, it really is. But yeah, and Sam Neill's so great. But yeah, I mean, I think the big problem for me with this film is that I didn't give a shit about any of the characters. They're terribly written. They're filled with tropes. The dialogue is bad. They're dicks. Yeah. Then I mean, like, even Elijah, who you're supposed to be like, I guess supposed to be rooting for, like, he very quickly cheats on his girlfriend. And I'm like, that didn't take much convincing at all.
Pretty quickly.
Right. Right. So I'm just like, this guy's not that great, like we're led to believe. So I just all around, I was like, I'm not invested in these people. I just don't care. I found it redundant and tedious.
Yeah. And if the soul is supposed to be, compared to the others, I guess, relatively innocent, how does, like, you know, fucking not, I mean, I guess it's technically not adultery because they're not married, but like, why is this grounded in Christian, you know, theology? Why, you know, it's, I just don't. You know, I mean, here's the thing, people, that I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, you know, when you have lots of different cultures that believe in lots of different gods, I'm just going to say maybe there's no God. I don't know. But this movie wasn't tedious. At least it kind of moved. But it also, like, I didn't think that Lynn, the girlfriend, I don't think her performance was very good. And then the other two. Joe is his name. Is Tara? Was that the other woman's name?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I thought the whole thing, like, that they were ex-spouses was just like part of the ruse, but it turns out they were married. So it was like, oh, this
that
is not
been funnier or played for more laughs, I think.
And I don't understand why it's like, you know, if you just like fucking take their souls. Like, I don't, you know, what the. Why is this act? So you get a fresh soul every, like, what's the motivation for this?
Right.
Well, then, I mean, even Satan has to have motivation, for Christ's sake.
Right. But how about the side deal too, where Frost and Lynn, the girlfriend, will get their souls back, but the other two still have to kill somebody. Like, what? Why is that a deal that's in play? That does not make any sense.
Yeah. And then, of course, at the end, Lynn ends up shooting not Elijah, but the other guy who was there, because the whole deal is if they don't sacrifice Elijah by midnight, then they all die and go to hell, right? Except the other guy is still there, so they've captured him as like their backup. And it's like, I don't know, he's had 9 years to maybe not be so innocent anymore, you know? I know he's stuck in this area, but I think if you're, you know, burying human sacrifices, doesn't that kind of eat away at, you know, at your soul? Just a question. So they let Elijah escapes and or they let him go. And Lynn has a rifle with a big scope on it, and she just kind of... It looks like she's firing into the distance, completely no aim, nothing. But it turns out she shot the guy that she didn't shoot 9 years ago. And so Satan kills Frost and takes his soul for not having managed this well enough, I guess. And then she becomes essentially Frost. She starts running the clinic, the thing, I don't know what you call it, the summoning place, the retreat, the movie, you know, they go through. By the way, people, just because superhero movies do end credits, mid-credit scenes and things like that, you don't have to do it. Okay. The movie can just end with her being the person who's running the retreat now, instead of me having to watch 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes of closing credits about a movie that I don't like very much. Just to see if I've missed anything, which had I turned it off, I would have. Lynn is now running the retreat. So did you both sit through the closing credits? Did you know that?
No, I sure did not.
Oh, yeah.
So thanks, Dave. Nope. I did not know
Hell
that.
No, I didn't. I turned it off as soon as I could.
Me too. I was like, fuck this.
So yeah. So closing credits. There you go. Lynn is running the retreat. Joy. I mean, not joy.
Just don't care.
Yeah.
No, and that's the thing. I was like, oh, there's not gonna be closing credits. I don't feel like sitting through, and what do you know, two movies I missed the post credit scenes.
Well, the reason I watched this one is because I was just thinking to myself, you know, this is the kind of movie that thinks it's going to be clever by doing this shit, you know. And I think what really bothers me about this is like, you know, when you think you're clever when you're not, I guess. It's like, oh man, this is like, and now she's going to run the thing. Well, you know, yeah, saw that coming. Anyway, fine, the summon. I don't want to like, you know, piss all over somebody's low-budge movie any more than I have to. Are there any closing thoughts, gang?
Yeah, I think there could be a good movie here. But it needs to be a lot more developed. I think it needs a lot more ideas, better characters, things like that. Mm-hmm. But the premise could possibly be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. And I think that a big part of this movie's problem is that Tara and Joe are so awful as humans that whenever show up on screen, it's just like, get these two off screen. I hate these two.
Exactly.
Like...
They're not fun bad. They're just bad bad.
Although I did laugh when Tara was like, see, I accidentally did fuck, marry, kill. I thought that was actually funny.
Yeah.
Oh, she completed the game. Yeah, she's like, who else has completed the game? Yeah, that was amusing.
That was funny. But this was so Get Out to me. It even gets to the point where Elijah, it's the equivalent of Daniel Kaluuya finding the box full of photographs. You know, mm-hmm. he finds on Tara's phone, like all the times that she's shown up at the retreat and been like, hey, bitches, or whatever it is she says.
Yep.
And it's just like, this is really derivative.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's something like all the things you have said absolutely hearken to Get Out. And something that was said, and it's a throwaway line, but as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh yeah, this is Get Out, was when Frost says something to Elijah about a teacup or like tea. And I'm like, oh, like the teacup in Get Out. So mm-hmm. like even in the like minutest details, I'm still just comparing it to Get Out, and it feels so derivative. Yeah. Great word.
Like, watch us get an email from the filmmakers, be like, you know, we wrote this 7 years ago and it took us this long to get made. And so, you know, we actually had all these deal, these things, and it's just a coincidence. And it'd be like, yeah, well, it doesn't look that way. Sorry.
I know. If that's true, I'd feel really bad.
I would too, you know, because then I would be like, oh, this does have some good ideas, half baked though they are. Anyway, so, okay, The Summoned. Now, are we all done with The Summoned?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's move on to our final movie of the evening, The Princess. Here's your IMDb summary. When a strong-willed princess refuses to wed the cruel sociopath, there's just one, she is kidnapped and locked in a remote tower of her father's castle. With her vindictive suitor intent on taking her father's throne, the princess must save the kingdom. Yeah. That's...
She reverse raids it. She fights her way down the tower.
Right.
Yes. I literally wrote that in my notes. Reverse dread, reverse raid. With a little bit of an update from Ever After. The great Drew Barrymore Cinderella movie.
I was going to say, if this was, John Wick, but with a princess and a sword instead of, you know, a dude with guns.
Oh, yeah. That too. I think those are all apt comparisons.
Yeah, right down to some of the stunt work. And also Bourne Identity with the whole circular staircase thing.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
But I don't know, Megan, before we rolled, you said you had a lot to say about The Princess. So why don't you lead us off? I would love to know the lots of things you have to say.
Oh, well, I wasn't going to talk about the plot. And I know you usually kick off with the plot. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty much it. I mean, you said the raid, both of you, and that's it. You know, she gets.
Yeah, that pretty much is it. Yeah, she's got to work her way down from the top.
She's supposed to marry this asshole who she doesn't want to marry. And so she doesn't, which you find out in a flashback. And that's why she's been locked in the tower. And so she has to break out of the tower so that she can stop the evil prince from marrying her 12-year-old sister. So that he can then. Here's the thing I don't understand. It's just like, if you're going to take over the kingdom, why don't you just fucking kill everybody and take over the kingdom? I mean, you got the fucking soldiers for it. Anyway.
Right? I thought that was very bizarre too.
I mean, that being said, do we really need to explain the plot? I mean, the princess has been trained by a
governess who also teaches her martial arts in addition to, and battle tactics in addition to her other lessons.
So that's how she, kills everybody with a couple of swords. Okay. I think we've explained the plot well enough. Megan, take over. What do you got?
Okay. So Evan, I have to tell you, when you suggested this, I was like, I don't want to watch this movie, but I wanted to indulge you because you were so excited. And I have to say, I'm actually kind of glad you did, because while I don't think this is an amazing film by any means, I had fun with it. I have it's to fun. Say, it is fun.
For sure.
Joey King, it is. Yeah. Joey King is really good as an action hero. I was very pleasantly surprised. It was really nice. I love the scene where she's surrounded on all the sides by all of, by the way, all of the dudes who are attacking her are morons. Yep. Like, almost everyone is just really dumb. But I like that she's surrounded on all sides and she lunges and jumps with the guy over the railing to go down like five floors and then like lands on another floor. I'm like, that's really great. And then I love when she runs into Lynn, her governess again, and they're fighting in the kitchen. I thought the kitchen fight was great. Yep. And then they run into Olga Kurylenko, who's got that wild whip. And then they fight her, and that's great. And yeah, and like, there's some interesting shots here. Like, in the very beginning, when she looks down at the tower, I'm like very much getting Black Narcissus vibes. And I'm like, ooh, that's kind of interesting. And then when she's running along the tower, she's like the do 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 do. I'm getting kind of like Mission Impossible, Wonder Woman vibes. So there's some interesting kind of feel here. Lots of martial arts, which is great. My criticism, though, is I would have liked to have seen better editing and better cinematography, because it's very shaky, it's very jarring, it's very choppy. And I would have loved to have seen some more wide shots, some more fluid cinematography and editing, so we really could have focused on that, because this is such an action heavy film. Yeah. It's really not doing a lot of character development. It's really focusing on the action. So if you're going to do that, really, you know, highlight it, put it front and center, and have really great cinematography and editing. But having said that, and I also was kind of bothered by the fact that Lynn is, you know, Asian American or Asian British. I mean, the actress is not, but it kind of felt like that kind of trope, like, oh, all Asians know mm-hmm. martial arts. And so it kind of was a bit icky for me. But having said that, I do love that we see so much of Lynn. Like, it's not just, we don't just see her in the flashbacks. We actually see her fighting too. Yeah. We see that she and the princess are friends and they have a really tight bond. So I love that it's like doing some tropey things, but it's also kind of subverting them in a way too. So yeah. And then the beheading at the end, whoo, that was gruesome and great.
That was fabulous. That was quite a beheading. Yeah.
It was quite a beheading. Yeah. And I love Dominic Cooper.
I thought she just cut his throat.
Oh yeah, no, I'm like, we're gonna see that head fall. Mm-hmm. And we did. And Dominic Cooper is so great. I love him. I love him in when he's playing a good guy. I love when he's a villain. He's such a great villain. So yeah, I really had fun with this.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna break in here real quick and say, you know, Evan suggested this and he was like, eh, it's a, you know, princess and she fights people. I was like, okay, sure. I was not expecting a hard R like this is. This is borderline
same.
NC-17, you know? So like with the amount of bloodletting that there is in this movie. And also,
so
I do want to say, I've seen Joey King in a lot of stuff and she's never really impressed me. And I really liked her in this a lot. I thought she really carried it well. I was amazed how many of her own stunts she did. And it's like, the few times that they actually show like a wide shot where there's like, that's her doing that shit, like rolling over a table, swinging a sword at a guy, picking up a pot and throwing it, you know? And that was really cool. Cause I think that's what makes the John Wick stuff work so well, is like Keanu Reeves is rolling around and doing all that shit because this is one camera rolling right now. Or we're only seeing one angle of the 14 cameras they have, whatever. in that regard, I liked how, you know, it would give you kind of wisely give you a little breather from the action and then get right back into it with a big set piece.
Yeah.
The only part that really dragged for me was the bit on the stairs. Cause I was just like, how can they keep this going? I mean, this is a fucking long flight of stairs, man. And then she jumped down five flights of stairs and used a guy as like, you know, a landing pad. So smart.
I love it. So good.
I also liked when she jumped out the window and grabbed like the flag or whatever that is, the sash, and was using that to like run back and forth on
Very
the side
Mission
of the wall.
Impossible, like Megan said earlier.
Yeah.
Thank you. I did say that.
I was really pleasantly surprised. This is the kind of movie that I needed on a Friday night when I was just kind of tired, but not tired enough to go to bed and just needed something to just like chill out with. Cause it was just like, I love it when a movie is a pleasant surprise. Mm-hmm. You know, I went into this not knowing what it was going to be. And I was just like, man, this movie's got a lot of good killing.
Yeah.
So much good killing. And you're right. It is really well paced. Yeah. That was really, really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a movie that falls into, I have three criteria for what makes a movie good. Within the first five minutes, if someone is naked, or if I'm laughing hysterically, or if there's dead people. And when I say dead people, I don't mean like the undead. I mean somebody is slicing and dicing like the princess does. And this movie, slicing and dicing in the first 5 minutes. In the first 3 minutes.
You know, she wakes up from being drugged.
Yeah.
You like see flashes of what happened. And then she's right up. She breaks her wrist so she can get out of her handcuffs. And then immediately just starts killing dudes as they come in the door.
And then resets her own wrist. Don't forget that.
Yes, she does. That beginning felt so much like a video game to me. And that is not, like, that's a compliment.
Sure.
Like, in the sense, like, this would be a great video game to wake up. You don't really know what's going on. You don't know what's happening. And you just got to fight your way out. Like, I love it. So, yeah, it's a great, great opening. Yeah.
Well,
and the one other thing I love too. Oh, I'm sorry. I know, Evan, I want to hear what you were to say. The one thing I was going to say, the other thing that I really love is I love it. It's a kind of a cliche line, but I don't care. I was here for it. I love when she's talking to her father in the flashback because she doesn't want to do the arranged marriage. And she's like, you know, I'm not property to be traded. And I'm like, yes, that's right. Have your feminist mm-hmm. moment. I love it. But yes, Evan.
Well,
yeah.
What did you think?
This was your suggestion. So I would love to hear if it held up.
Oh, absolutely. It did. First, I'm just going to say I'm really glad that Yay. You both enjoyed it.
Because
I had seen trailer for this, and I don't watch a ton of trailers, but occasionally I see things. And I just thought this seemed like it was going to be so much fun. I'm like, it's an action movie. It's like a princess is going around killing people. And like, just there were just so many. There seemed like there were going to be a lot of like silly moments, but a lot of like action packed moments. And so the movie definitely delivered on all that. It's like an hour and a half. It doesn't overstay its welcome. There's lots of really fun fighting and killing and fight choreography. I love when she gives those guys her pearl necklace. She like rolls the pearls down the stairs so they all fall over. And
oh,
then
yes.
she runs stepping on all of their heads down the stairs. There's so many great moments where she just wipes the floor with any of the shitty men. And I love how like in the beginning, like a lot of the men are calling her like the B word and the C word. And she's just fucking killing the shit out of them. Like when she pushes that guy out the window in the beginning and he like falls to his death, or when she sets that knight on fire and then his flaming corpse falls to the ground. When there's the giant guy in the loincloth with the bull helmet or whatever. She fucking stabs the shit out of him with his helmet and takes him out.
Yeah.
There's just so many great moments. The beheading later when Don McCooper's head falls on the ground and the look of disbelief on his severed head is amazing.
I appreciated, I don't know why I liked this moment so much, but when the guy with the horns is going into the room to like take a piss or whatever he's going to do, I really liked the fact that she jumped into the bath and like was holding her breath mm-hmm. underwater. I don't know why I liked that. I was just like, yeah, you can hold your breath.
It was
breath
a cool
underwater.
Shot.
For a really long time.
Yeah. Well, she's young. She's in good shape. She's been working out with Lynn, you know, whatever.
That she has. Yeah. So. No, that was great. I agree. There's so many great moments, so many great shots. I want to watch this again. It was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I don't know how you all feel, but when I think about like the streaming services, I don't usually think of Hulu as having the great original content. You know, you usually think of probably Netflix first and then, you know, Prime. You know, I don't know what mm-hmm. order you would all put them in, but I don't think of Hulu when I think, oh, I got to watch this. But this, I mean, Hulu,
I think,
way to go.
I think one of the advantages of Hulu being connected with Disney is that Hulu has been getting these 20th century releases. So they've been getting some of the like odder stuff that Disney's like, whatever, I'm not going to kick that out to the movies. So I'll just kick it to Hulu. Like I'll kick good luck to you, Leo Grand, to Hulu, mm-hmm. and I'll kick the princess to Hulu. And like movies that may not have like other, may have gotten like a limited theatrical release or might not, you know, might have kind of like died on the vine, that they're just going to throw them on Hulu. And I feel like we've been the beneficiary of that actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
I completely agree with you with those two, and also the addition of Crush, which I know I keep talking about it, but it's on Hulu and it's wonderful and it's lovely. But yeah, no, I'm like, Hulu's, I agree with you, Dave. I never really thought about Hulu as having great original, especially movies. Like they had some great original series, but not mm-hmm. really movies, but they're bringing it. And I think you're right, Evan. I think it's the 20th century Disney stuff that it's too intense, too wild and intense for Disney.
Perfect
so
for Hulu.
It's where it's going and I'm liking it.
Yeah.
Yup. Yep.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and put this out there for all the execs listening. Let's have more princesses killing people movies. Let's do that.
I am very much here for that.
Oh, you know, man.
Like a parallel universe where, you know, Princess Diana just like starts killing everyone because like she doesn't, you know, like being married to Prince Charles anymore. That'd be awesome.
There's a great children's book that has been around for a very long time called The Paper Bag Princess. And it's about a princess who doesn't want to be a traditional princess. And she wants to go out and like fight dragons and stuff. And so this very much is giving me that kind of vibe. And I'm here for that. I love that. I love a dark fairy tale. I love kind of turning that on its head. And it's been done so many times, but this is really fun. And it's done good killing.
I'm so
good
glad
job.
You both enjoyed it. Because I was like, I watched a trailer. So I'm like, this is a trailer. The movie might not live up to this. It might not be good. But I do love a mashup. I do love, sure. Just goofy action movies. And so I was like, it's a bit of a risk on this recommendation. But I'm hoping it's the kind of fun that they both enjoyed. I'm so happy and psyched that you both had a lot of fun watching it.
Yeah. This is a hoot. It's a good ride, you know.
I know. I was so delighted. I was like, woohoo, this is great. And I want to see Joey King in more action films.
I want to see her do another action movie. I want to see her, be like, she's the college student and her favorite professor's been kidnapped. So she's
like kind of taken and she's got to go rescue her favorite professor.
Yeah,
I
maybe
love
her
it.
Favorite professor is, teaching like a government workshop, but used to be in the CIA, So there you go.
Dave, this is amazing. I'm here for this.
Yeah. So she's like, I remember I took that, I've been to the range with my, aunt a bunch of times.
My survivalist
and she taught me how to shoot a 9mm. So,
Yeah. Oh, that's very your next. I like
it. Yes. Her aunt is played by Sharni Vincent. See, there you go. So
yes. Oh, this is so good. I'm here for it. I think that's the thing is that the princess is pulling inspiration and influences from so many sources, but it's pulling from really good sources, but it's also setting itself apart and doing unique things too, which I think is great. So it's paying homage to so many things, but it's also, kind of charting its own course, which is just the best of both worlds.
Yeah. And I don't know how, franchises work on streaming services, if they would, make a princess franchise. But unfortunately, the way this is written, it's kind of like a totally standalone. It sort of ends with like, you're the badass princess and now you're going to rule the kingdom. And what is the next movie? Like some fucking dudes decide they're going to like try to take over the kingdom and she's just like, nah, just kill everyone. Because we've seen that movie now. So, I don't know.
I might not be mad at seeing that movie again, though.
If it can top its own stunts,
right?
Why not?
Yeah, the stunts were great. Great stunt choreography. Mm-hmm. Really good.
Yeah, it was fun. Well, any final thoughts on the princess, everybody?
My favorite moment I wanted to point out, just because it didn't come up in discussion, was the moment where she's going to rescue her family and they're in a cell and there's a bunch of guys drinking and playing dice. And she just, in the middle of it, grabs the cup out of this guy's hand and drinks the entire thing standing there. And they wait for her to finish the beer. She, burps and was like, thanks, I needed that. And then whips all of their asses.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to take issue with it being beer. I'm going to say mead because of the time of,
Yes.
I have no fucking idea.
No, it probably would have been mead, but it could be. Yes. Who knows?
It's all honey, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a hoot. And I want to say again, Evan, thank you for saying we should watch The Princess. So.
I know. Right. Bravo to you, Evan. Shucks. Good job.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's Spoiler Piece Theater for this week. Let's see. Where can we see all these movies? Thor: Love and Thunder is in theaters now. Mm-hmm. Opens today. On the third day is on Shudder. The Summoned is on VOD. The Princess is on Hulu. All of these movies are available now for your enjoyment. Yay! Well, two of them are available for your enjoyment. Two of them are not available for enjoyment. They're just available. So, Yes. I couldn't.
I'm sorry. I was just throwing off because I'm used to doing the recap. Anyway. Yeah. But I think we probably all agree on everything, so it's fine.
I think
fine.
We do. I think the Thor is your mileage may vary. We'd all say pass on the third day and the Summoned, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And then the Princess is a hard yay from all three of us.
Yep. Yeah.
All righty. So, well, that, again, I say, that is Spoiler Piece Theater for this week. I want to thank our auto... Clamor. I want to thank our auto. I want to thank our editor, Auto Clamor. I want to thank our auto. This is what happens when I talk late at night, everybody. I apologize. Thank our editor, Otto Klammer. Otto takes everything out of our hands and does the heavy lifting. So thank you, Otto.
Thanks, Otto.
Thanks, Otto.
You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you get podcasts. Let me try that again. You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you can get podcasts. If you want to find us, our website is spoilerpiece.com. If you want to follow us on social media, we're Spoiler Piece Theater on Facebook, at Spoiler Piece on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. If you'd like to get in touch with us and tell us what your idea is for the second Princess movie, should it come up, you can email us, spoilerpiece@gmail.com. Yeah. Or you could give us a call.
At 862-21-PIECE.
And tell us, you know, very detailed voice message what you think the second Princess movie should be and why The Summoned is not just Get Out, but it is. If you like the show, please rate us and review us by going to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece. You can also rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. When you do that, it really helps us out. So please consider doing that if you haven't already. And if you really, really like the show, please consider joining our Patreon. As I mentioned at the top of the show, this week we talk about the 1976 sci-fi film Logan's Run, starring Basil Exposition. And that, as they say, is that. My name is Dave Riedel. I'm a movie type person. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. And you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Dave Sees Movies.
My name is Evan Crean, co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon, and that's real as in film reel.
And my name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. You can follow me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld or on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS.
And Evan and Megan, we'll see you next week, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.